at Bucky's Auto Service Centers for the hard shopper person in your life. It's time for Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Or to celebrate Hanukkah, head on over to Bucky's Auto Service Centers. They'll be there for you throughout the holidays and throughout the year with 16 locations, been around since 1948. The good men and women at Bucky's know what they're doing. See how I slipped the various holidays in there, Tom? See how I did that?
Yep, you're the holiday man, John.
Thank you, Tom. Round, round, get around. All right, here's a challenge for Mike Lewis. We've got three stories of somewhat interest. We're going to try to rattle through all three. Hey, where'd you turn your microphone? Allow me to bralette cast like a professional. Turn him on, Andrew. What the heck are you doing? Can you hear you? There you go, huh? Is that better? I can't hear him. All right, switch over. We'll pull an audible here.
There we go. Different
how
mic.
How you doing there?
Now we've got a dead mic, I think.
Dead mic, everybody. Oh. Hold on.
Dead Mike Lewis.
Got it. All right. Hey, Mike Lewis. So here we go. Let's see if we do this. A secret poll. Is there a problem when it came to the upzoning? Did we hear from the public enough? And also, Mayor Jenny Durkan made some news when she decided she would give a no-bid contract to an associate. Let's start first with the poll. What does the poll tell us, and why is it secret?
So what happens is whenever there's any bit of legislation that's going to go before the voters in Seattle is there's a little bit of private polling that happens to find out whether or not this thing is going to do well and how you campaign for it. In this particular case, it was the education levy, which has largely been a popular thing in Seattle. But a group, EMC, does this sort of polling behind the scenes to find out, all right, how's it doing and how do we make sure that this thing wins? Mm-hmm. But what they also do is they sort of want to take a test of the weather system generally of politics. And when you get a chance to see these polls, and often they're not released to the public, and this one wasn't, but I managed to find a copy of it, it said they talk about, well, when you are politicking this thing, who do you want to buddy up to? And mm-hmm. It turns out you really don't want to buddy up to the city council in Seattle because the respondents to this poll, when asked questions about the education tax levy, they were very much in favor. It ended mm-hmm. up winning nearly 69%. When they asked questions about the city council, it was exactly the opposite. There was a strong dislike of the city council throughout in any question involving the city council. They don't trust them to spend their money. They don't like them particularly well. And this is a troubling matter for the city council members because seven of them are up for re-election next year.
Mm-hmm.
And adding a little insult to injury is the fact that while the council and the mayor took a big hit over the head tax issue in June, the mayor seems to be doing quite well in the more recent poll, and her favorability ratings are in the 60s, which is great for a mayor in Seattle. That's mm-hmm. about as high as you're ever going to get.
Uh-huh.
But the city council is, you know, sliding the other direction pretty rapidly.
Do we have any other polling, secret polling or whatever, to compare this council to other councils?
So, yeah, there's a little bit out there. I found some other polls, older ones. It's difficult because council races have changed a little bit, and
right.
frequently the councils are compared in relation to the mayor, and the mayor's compared in relation to the council.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, this one with a almost 50% disapproval and one in five voters strongly disapproving is unusually high, even for a Seattle City Council. And I think this particular council has gotten more unpopular than most over the last 15 years or so.
Mike, I'm wondering, though, you know, it's just like Congress as a whole is very unpopular, but your individual congressman, your voters tend to like. Is there a chance that the city council as a whole would be unpopular, but especially since we now have neighborhoods voting for individual council members, say, Shama Sawant may be popular in her one particular district and very unpopular outside. Is it fair to lump all the council candidates together to say, oh, people hate the council as a whole, and could it give more hope to some of the council members already seated to think that it's the council as a whole and not me individually that's the problem?
Well, given that it's politics, it's always fair, Tom. And and I would also say this, that if you were to talk to Republicans in Congress and you would talk about the impression of Congress and you would talk then about what happened in California, you would find that there is an associative effect. Mm-hmm. Now, is it a direct effect? Not it. If you're a popular person, you're a popular person in your district. But
right.
Can this change the margin from winning a seat by 5 points to losing a seat by 5 points? Absolutely. And that's why what you're going to see over the next couple of months I'm predicting it here, and everyone else who follows city government knows this, a whole bunch of people weighing in to run for city council, because almost every council member, with one or two exceptions, is seen as relatively weak, and there's going to be two open seats anyway. Mm-hmm. We're going to be flooded with people running for city council, and also because it's district, and also because of democracy vouchers. It's going to be a crowded field next year, and I think this is going to be part of the reason why.
Either one of you, jump in on this. So Oregon decided it would no longer have off-year elections. It would do all the elections in even years, and they found voter turnout increased. And if you look at voter turnout in Seattle when it's an off year, when we elect these guys, only 100,000 people or 120,000 people like show up. But then you'll get 300,000 or 350,000 in the even year. So if we just moved it so that people weren't sort of doing this dip, it's called the primary dip, where they sort of drops back down. You lose a lot of sort of quote unquote disenfranchised or minority voters don't vote on those things. So maybe the people that are in there right now don't truly represent the people that are being polled.
Well, there's always that possibility. There's always a possibility that the poll has, you know, some error in the questions. But looking at it kind of closely, I think that's an interesting idea. And there's a lot of places that have talked about that exact thing. The problem for elections offices is they love separating it out because it's an enormous amount of work to front load every race mm-hmm. onto one ballot. It actually, in some cases, makes it very difficult to work your way through the ballot.
Uh-huh.
That's the downside to it. The upside is that absolutely you get higher turnouts regularly in that regard.
That's right. When voter turnout to improve. Okay, moving on to the next one. How about the fact that there's political trouble baked into the cake? This is a story from the Seattle Times referring to Seattle's upzoning plan. Did the city council truly get a chance to really consider what the people want, or was this sort of done behind doors before anybody even got up to the microphone?
This is another terrific Danny Westney column. Specifically, what the suspicion has been for a long time when former mayor Ed Murray entered into the housing and affordability and livability index, when he was doing the HALA plan, there was a feeling like, wow, a lot of this stuff seems sort of as a fait accompli. This is we're going to do this, just how much, rather than should we do this at all. And I think that what Danny's column says essentially is that when they looked at ways to improve housing affordability, they kind of looked at one idea, upzoning and increasing density, to the expense of any other ideas that you could possibly implement. And so when they went to do it, upzoning was going to happen. It was a matter of where. Now it looks like they're backing up on this a little bit with the more recent studies. But absolutely, if you were to talk to anybody involved in housing and the pressure developers were putting on them and the pressure developers put on them specifically so they wouldn't have to pay for affordable housing, it looks like this whole process was, you know, people would say rigged from the beginning.
Is there any way to be able to prove that?
To prove that it was rigged from the beginning? This is going to be a lot of hearsay. I guess if you could do a Public Information Act request and get every bit of correspondence, all you would get is inference. You probably wouldn't get saying, yes, we're absolutely going to game this system. I mean,
screw the public.
You would hope you could get that email at some point as a reporter. You'd be pretty shocked by it all. So, you know, there isn't a way to prove it. But, yes, you could draw an inference.
Tom, anything you're going to check on this one?
The irony of this story is that what is the biggest knock against Seattle politics? It's that we are so processy that we take forever to decide what to do with one single sidewalk square. And here is an example of efficiency. Even Danny Westney says this is really a good program, what they've come up with. It's just that they came up with this good program without any input from the neighborhoods. And so that's what's not good about it. And the irony of this is because I think Westney does a good job of convincing us this is not a very nice way to go, that we're actually arguing for process over efficiency, which usually is the other way around mm-hmm. in this town.
Okay. One last one is the fact that Durkin had a longtime associate, a friend I think they'd be described as, a $720,000 no-bid contract was given to this individual to help steer Seattle's light rail planning. Is she in any hot water? Does anything splash back on the mayor for this one?
So I know that they were talking about this story yesterday. Again, another good Seattle Times story, this one by Mike Lindblom. This is the story. Anne Fennessy, who has been a consultant, a longtime friend of Mayor Jenny Durkin, and has been a consultant on transit issues, and has already scored a handful of $30,000 contracts, just got handed a $720,000 contract that was not a bid contract. It was handed, they interviewed four people. Mm-hmm. She got the contract. She's been pretty close to the mayor for many, many years. Her husband also works for the mayor as a deputy mayor, and the feeling is like, wow, this is really insular. You didn't put it out to bid, and now she's getting a salary that's effectively going to be $180,000 a year for the next 4 years to decide on, to be the point of contact on the light rail extension. This is seen, I think, is what the popular word this year, I think, is the optics of this.
Yes.
Are not terribly good. It looks like someone handed a friend a big contract, did not put that contract out to bid, tried to slip it in, and, you know, fortunately, we've got some good reporters in this town, and now people are talking about it.
Got it. Tom, anything on this one?
I'm just wondering, is this a bad thing? Here's the problem, because we all don't want, if you're suspicious of whoever's in power, you're going to say, oh, they're just, this is not a good choice. Mm-hmm. They're just giving it to their friends, and we got to stop that. I think, based on what her work that she did earlier, she was the one that looked at that streetcar business and said, this is ridiculous. This is costing us a fortune. Mm-hmm. Based on her report, Jenny Durkin said, oh, you're right. We're going to stop this in its tracks and suspend it immediately.
Yeah.
That maybe and Fantasy is a perfect choice, but because she's a friend of the mayor's, should we, you know, pass some kind of ethical standards that say you cannot just dole these out to friends, even if you think it's the right choice?
Well, also, the fact that the consultant, Dan Fennessy, her husband works for the mayor. And I think that that's the other sort of, you know, rub in this regard. I agree with you. It could be that she is entirely the best qualified person. But when it happens under the cloak of darkness and when it's a no-bid contract and a sizable one at that.
Yeah, why no bid? I thought there's a certain amount of money they don't have to bid out on. I think it's $50,000 or something.
For consultants, there's a lot more leeway
on
this sort of thing. So they didn't do anything, as far as them doing anything illegal here, absolutely not.
Okay.
It doesn't appear any attorney says that. They just said, like, wow, this one looks, you know, sort of stinky, and maybe this was a bad idea by the mayor.
And is she the one that said that trolley thing was a stupid idea?
Yeah,
give her more money. Give her more money. Thank you. Mike Lewis.
I knew we'd win you over, John.
Mike Lewis on a different microphone. How about that?
Yeah.
You okay there, Jacob? You've been blowing into your microphone for the last couple minutes. You should smell sort of a musky smell and tea, because that's what Mike Lewis has been drinking there. All right, here he goes, heading out the door. All right, there we go. Took care of all of that. We appreciate him stopping in. Plus, also, there's a story that this seems to be kicking around 2017, that they saw this originally was the idea that less and less people want to be police officers. And they said, well, you'll see is statistically, you'll see crime begin to go up. Now, the one study that I had seen, Tom, in 2016, the number of police officers began to drop, and they looked at Baltimore, and Baltimore's crime went up. So they did a ratio of officers available to respond, crime increases, and overall, the one story from 2016 and 17 that I read about said, this is going to be happening in a whole bunch of major cities across the United States because less and less people want to be police officers.
Yeah, they say that they trace it back to the Ferguson, Missouri riots, or whatever you want to call them, that was the beginning of this sort of bad image for cops. And I would say, I think the Rodney King incident probably was the first one that brought us into modern consciousness, because there was a videotape of it. But now that we all have phones, there is so much more scrutiny of what police officers do that never used to be scrutinized. And so, since most cops are not involved in these kinds of situations, in fact, you know, very few of them ever even, you know, pull a gun, for instance, that it's kind of damaging the image of cops all the way around in terms of public perception of them. And as a result, the cops themselves feel like we're getting shafted. We are not respected anymore in society. And so who wants to do that? We put our lives on the line, and then we get called on the carpet for every little thing we do. So from both the outside view of how popular cops are versus the cops perception of how people perceive them, they say it's really a problem. And you've got 66% of all police departments in this country are having trouble recruiting.
Right. I mean, just look at someone like you mentioned, Ferguson. So Darren Wilson is in his car. He goes up, tells the guy to come over to the car, comes to the car. Michael Brown reaches in through the car and punches him in the face, tries to take his gun from him. The gun goes off. It hits Darren Wilson and hits Michael Brown. And then he gets out of the car, and Michael Brown turns around and starts coming back at him, and he shoots and kills Michael Brown. And Darren Wilson apparently was a racist or a horrible human being and deserves to be killed or at least run out of town. When Darren Wilson was found to be not guilty, and he was actually in fear of his life when Michael Brown was coming towards him. And then we had a lie, a national lie, repeated over and over and over again, including on the fields of the NFL, that hands up, don't shoot was one of the biggest lies in the Washington Post from, I think, 2014 or 15. So, but for Darren Wilson, is that guy ever going to be a cop again, or could he ever be a cop again? He was so completely destroyed by the media and by politicians that like to muck this rake and rake this muck and this racist stuff back and forth, because that's how they make money. They destroy someone like Darren Wilson, and that also sets it in a tone, as you say, Tom, to anybody else that might want to be a cop. Why would I ever want that job?
So, to be fair, though, Darren Wilson, he was individually found not guilty of any improprieties. However, they did expose a racist cop system in that town. And so there's a reason for both sides to take umbrage at what happened in Ferguson. Now, that's all the bad news. Now, here's the good news about this. First off, there are certain departments, I think it's Tempe, Arizona, where they realize that if they recruit and they recruit for diversity, that they have a better chance of meeting. In fact, they're one of the 34% of police departments that don't have a problem getting enough officers. That if you start recruiting women and minorities more aggressively, you're better off. In fact, the suggestion is that maybe they should start thinking of it in terms of college football style recruiting. They say a lot of times individuals want to become cops, but the families talk them out of it, mm-hmm. or families do not buy in because they think it's either too dangerous or whatever political reasons, both right and left can weigh in on that maybe they ought to recruit them differently. And the other silver lining to this is millennials don't seem to have the problem that people of our generation do, being scrutinized, being filmed. We now are raising a generation that are so used to everything being taped or everything being filmed on cameras that they say the millennial generation actually does not see that heightened scrutiny as a problem. Mm-hmm. In fact, they're the ones advocating for, wearing cameras, police wearing cameras on their vest cameras, because they think that's a good thing, and that maybe we're just in that awkward transitional period, and maybe things will break with the millennial generation.
Mm. All right. Well, I mean, would you want to sign up to be a police officer if you were a 23, 24-year-old guy? Andrew, would you want to be a cop? Andrew? He's not in the basement. He's just sitting right here in front of me.
I have a friend who's a year older than me who is becoming one, but okay. I wouldn't. I mean, it sounds interesting, but I mean, with everything I've been hearing about the climate, especially here in Seattle, I wouldn't want to be a Seattle police officer.
So our producer left, Patrick left too, and Patrick. Then graduated from the academy and is now in the training process. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, he texted us to tell me the story that when it comes time to be sprayed in the face with mace, and then they have you do all sorts of stuff. You got to be able to put handcuffs on somebody, make your way to a car, get to your radio, make a call, while having the spray directly into your face. They are afraid that a fellow student wouldn't hit you hard enough, would might have some mercy on you. So actually, Patrick's mother came in and sprayed him in the face with the mace.
Yeah.
Gave him a good blast of it, even harder than he said than his instructor did. And then he had to go through the whole process. So Patrick leaves here in order to become a police officer. We haven't spoken to him since, but there's somebody that obviously you have to be driven out of a crappy job like this to go to an even crappier job to be a police officer.
Actually, Patrick's mother's been waiting 22 years to do that to him.
We'll come right back. Tom and Curly Show right here on Cairo Radio. Alrighty, Michael Shoot Bingo is going to bring you the know-it-all quiz that's happening tomorrow. You get on the phone to get on the air to play us. We're going to ask you five questions of stories we've covered all week. You get a chance to see Michael Bublé. Two tickets to see Bublé when he comes to the Tacoma Dome on April 6th. I thought he had retired. He wasn't going to perform anymore. Remember that? Where his kid got sick or something? But he's back again?
Apparently, yeah.
He's back. Is this the slightly overweight Michael Bublé or the thinner, sexier Michael Bublé? Do we know? Can we check on that? Yeah, I guess check on that right away. I don't know why that wasn't our lead story. Michael Bublé coming to the Tacoma Dome April 6th. Get a chance to enjoy him plus six tickets. The Seattle Seahawks Junior 12s Club annual holiday party on the 22nd of December. Is that the 12s Kids Club that's slightly overweight or the good-looking young 12s? You can also find more Ringing the Holidays with Blitz and Boom and the Seagals as well. There's a petting zoo right near the Seagals. That's going to be dangerous. And much more. You can find out more by heading over to the website that we give you. And it's not listed right here. That's a shame. Boy, somebody screwed that up. All right, Tom. The know-it-all quiz. That's tomorrow. Muckleshoot bingo. You a fan of Michael Bublé?
You know, I can take him or leave him.
Okay, that's nice, Tom. I gave you an opportunity to help promote one of our sponsors and appreciate that, Mr. Wet Blanket. All right.
Do you like him, John?
I do. I really like Michael Bublé. I'm a serious Michael. He's on my Pandora thing. He's an entire thing. He sings a great song called "That's All." I mean, it's a song I think from the 50s or something like that. But man,
That's all. That's all. Yeah. That's all.
I can only give you country da, 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 walks in springtime.
Yeah, that's a great song.
I'm not done. And a hand to hold when leaves begin to fall. Okay, here we go. I think I predicted this. I said there would be a backlash, that the Me Too movement would eventually begin to hurt women. And it seems, as a story from the Wall Street Journal, that people that are in business world want to have less and less to do with women and may not hire women because they are women for fear that they may be facing down the barrel of a lawsuit or some sort of public scandal because somebody might have looked at somebody a certain way, touched somebody inappropriately, or maybe without even intent to harm the individual. And now you are... What are you laughing at?
Yeah, it's just without intent. This is a great story, but it's tricky. But finish your thought.
I found a piece. Johnny Taylor, who's the CEO of Society for Human Resource Management, says that this is a trend, that businesses are not hiring women because they're afraid that they may have somebody that may say they've been sexually assaulted, or maybe someone will sexually assault them.
There were men who specifically said, "I will not hire a woman going forward." Those who said they would hire a woman said they would not travel with one, and they, and more importantly, would not engage in activities after business hours. And, you know, oftentimes that's where the relationships are built.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that in this very tight labor market that you would begin to weed out highly qualified people because you have some fear, a paranoia almost, that there's a risk, they present a risk to you and your reputation, is just not smart. So it's not good business. It's illegal. We would really have taken ourselves backwards as a society. We've worked so hard for the last several decades to ensure equality, equal opportunities for women in the workplace. And there's a real risk that if this narrative takes hold, that it could undo a lot of the work that we've done as a society.
Mm-hmm. See, I said this.
That's right. But you sound like you're endorsing it. And the thing is, this is a development that's a bad development coming out of the Me Too movement that needs to be stopped in its tracks, is what he's suggesting. The idea here, and I understand the fear that right now men feel like women have the upper hand for a change, because their accusations hold water where before the
whether true or not or
didn't.
Proven or unproven.
That's right. But the same thing goes, yes, but whether true or not, it used to be on the other case, whether it was true or not, what the woman said was never given much credence.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always overblown, you know, over sort of weighed by, you know, the men's position. Now the men are finding themselves in the same position that women might have found themselves in. And suddenly they're, oh, no, then I can't play at all.
Mm-hmm.
That is the concern. And so as one person put it, I think it's in the article, it's perfect, that those men are going to back out of a sexual harassment complaint and right into a sex discrimination complaint.
Mm-hmm.
If you're so paranoid about being accused of harassing somebody, then and you end up not hiring him for that, that is just as wrong or illegal as it is for any kind of sexual harassment to happen.
Well, it's going to be hard to prove, because what you would do is you have two candidates sitting down in front of you. One is male, one is female. And I've seen a study that says the guy shied away from the attractive female, and chose the male, or shied away from the attractive female and hired the less attractive female, thinking, well, that'd be a safer bet. Because you have to start to look at your liability. I remember a number of years ago, I talked to a friend of mine who had this big business, and he said, God, I felt so bad. This great guy came in. We wanted to hire him. He was perfect for the job. But people above me, at the management level above, said, no way. Because if we ever have to fire that guy, we'll never be able to get rid of him without a lawsuit. He happened to be gay, and he happened to be black. So they said, we can't hire him for that reason. I thought, well, that seems to be the worst possible discrimination, because you're now, you're managing for catastrophe, and you're managing for this liability. And this guy that's highly qualified, you don't know if he's going to sue you. But they say, look, the history shows that we just will not be able to get rid of him, so we don't hire him. We pass on that guy. The same fear that you pass on the attractive woman who may be good at her job, but, oh, would she attract Larry, who works downstairs in the accounting department? And would Larry, you know, do something or say something? We can't trust Larry, an attractive woman. So I think this is why
fire Larry.
But Larry hasn't done anything yet, Tom.
Well, I know, and neither has the woman. But the idea is, if you have employees that you think can't control themselves around attractive women, the problem isn't the attractive women. The problem is the employees. Well, so you have, if you want to anticipate something with Larry, the Larrys of the world, then you talk to him and say, listen, you know, here's how we're going to play by, you know, these kinds of rules. You've got to make sure that it's, you're not hurting the woman or the black or the gay employee, because some people may, that we already have on staff might react negatively. That is discrimination, and that is bad. That's a good example of that. And the problem is, just by, you know, playing it safe doesn't mean that that's legitimate. I think it's an interesting argument. I don't know enough about how business works, but they say a lot of this bonding that guy was talking about in that quote says a lot of these are after hours kinds of developments. Mm-hmm. And you decide, well, I'm not going to invite women to the bar because that'll look like it's sexual. If they then only hang out at the bars with the guys, and then they create all these bonds that you know, help their businesses, that's unfair. And you just it's real easy. They quote one person who was getting all bent out of shape about this, an executive who said, you know, I just realized this is ridiculous. Just don't be a jerk, and you're probably going to get along just fine. That the number of false accusations, you know, are so minuscule, we're building them up into this huge mountain. That's not really the case. If men behaved and women behaved too, you wouldn't have those kind of problems. And in almost all cases, they do behave.
I saw something today. I sent it over to Jacob. He ignored it because it had a slight a sexual tinge to it. So he gets all uncomfortable. It's called consent video.
Okay.
And it works this way, that you're involved in a sexual act or prior to it, or you know that it's about to occur. The guy reaches over, takes his phone, and turns the video camera on, and you can see him, and he holds it off to the side, so he's got both himself and his partner there in the photo, in the video, and says, it looks like we're about to, you know, whatever, get it on. Are you okay with doing this? And it's a consent video that is now sort of taking hold, where people say, well, at least I've got some evidence that the person was not too drunk and they wanted to cooperate and they were okay with it. They say a woman will go along with it if you can take the thing and turn the phone off and see that the video is turned off at that point, so that he's not surreptitiously videotaping them. But it's called consent video. And I wouldn't say it's sweeping the world, but it's at least putting down a legal marker for the guy so that it doesn't come back later on that, you know, he raped her.
The key is make sure it doesn't look like a hostage video. Yeah, I'm fine having sex with Larry.
Hey, you know what? Why are you doing that to Larry? He's down in accounting, Tom. He's
you never brought done him up.
Oh, but you brought him back up and had him tying up a woman. All right, we'll come right back. Online Trading Academy, text line 98973, 98973. We do love to hear from you. You also come through the other door, which is the Tom and Curly Facebook page, and also MyNorthWest.com. Great ways to get in touch with the show, and we give you great honor. One of you gets a chance to be Letter of the Day. It's always fun to hear from you. You guys are smarter and funnier and wittier than we are. Now, of course, you get a chance to sit at home and come up with stuff. We just got to pull this out of our rear ends every day. by the way, speaking of that, I'm feeling pretty good about that thing we did with the movie trailer, so I'm going to do more sound effects on this story time, because I think it needs it. And I like to do, you keep doing a bit until it fails, and then you wait 3 weeks and then try it again. Okay?
It's the Curly principle.
That's right. Okay, so Andrew's going to play. You're going to tell the story. And, of course, since it's a one-second delay, this thing's going to be a train wreck. Okay, so Andrew's going to play the part of the people at working at Amazon. Jacob will fire off a few of the sound effects. What did I give you? Only one? What did I give you?
I just have a forklift.
Okay, I'll take care of the spray thing. Okay. All right, you ready, Tom? What happened to the Amazon workers?
Yes. So, at an Amazon fulfillment center in New Jersey, something terrible happened that made two dozen of them have to rush to the hospital.
What happened, Tom?
Oh, do you want me to say?
Yeah, keep going.
Okay. So, what happened was they are moving a can of bear repellent spray, and a robot accidentally tore open the can and sprayed everybody in the warehouse. Now, if you're wondering what that is like, it's basically pepper spray in the face of 24 of the employees.
Wow.
They all had to be hospitalized.
Oh, my gosh. That's terrible. What happened to the 24?
Ah! I just got sprayed in the eyes. And so did 23 other people. The pain! So much pain!
There we go. By the way, so much pain was an ad-lib on Andrew's part. All right, so what did Amazon say about this? Is it it's an unusual thing, or is this... The rumor is mostly flying that this is how robots take over.
Well, the idea here is that they say, we put our employee safety number one. So as soon as this happened, we shut down the entire third wing of our fulfillment center and sent everyone off to the hospital. They will all be released within 24 hours. Nothing serious happened. The safety of our employees is most important. Mm-hmm. However, the wholesale department store union, which has been shut out from Amazon, Amazon is not unionized, say that this is a perfect example of the dangers that robots pose to humans.
Uh-oh.
Amazon's automated robots put humans in life-threatening danger today, the effects of which could be catastrophic, and the long-term effects are unknown for the 80 others that weren't evacuated.
Good lordy.
So
one last story just to hit, if we can hit it real fast, is just the fact that since it's an aging population happening in Japan, there are a number of homes, I mean a large number of homes, in places just outside of major cities because the old folks are either kicking the bucket or moving to a retirement community. So these homes are just there and no one's able to live in them, and they're selling them at an incredibly reduced price. You could actually buy a home in Japan for how much money, Tom?
I don't have that in front of me, John, because I wasn't prepared.
That's
to
right.
Do the
I think
story
it's like
just
it's,
now.
It's very little. What was it? You have to just pay the taxes, small down payment, and you get a pretty nice home. Most of them are in pretty good condition, and they just simply need somebody to get in there and take them over just to keep the properties up.
Yeah, they say the gratis transfer, they say, for the sum of literally $0. You just pay a few taxes and commission fees for the agent, and the place is yours.
Right.
I know. It's just the opposite of what's happening here in this city.
That's right. Well, we don't have a lot of old people that are kicking the bucket yet, Tom.
They're all hanging out on the couches.
Right back.